Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 3rd, 2011. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'll be your host. We're still in the midst of a most dangerous moment of history. We're literally on the threshold of World War III. Lyndon LaRouche put the world on notice at the end of October of a series of new developments which put us on the verge of war, including the possibility of a nuclear war. And these are developments associated with the British Empire's deployment of its puppet Barack Obama to light the fuse. There were major developments throughout November following LaRouche's warning. These were events which both confirmed what Lyndon LaRouche was warning about, as well as events which showed that leading institutional networks and major governments were responding to what Mr. LaRouche was saying and taking measures to prevent war from breaking out. Among these developments has been a really spectacular mobilization by the Russians, especially President Medvedev, to make it clear that the Russians are both aware of these dangers and are engaging in advanced war avoidance mobilization, including what to me was a most extraordinary statement when Medvedev, in opening up the at Kaliningrad, the Russian anti-missile defense system, said that the Russians are prepared, if necessary, to take out, use offensive measures to take out the proposed so-called anti-missile systems that are being put in by the United States. Also, we're watching a mobilization in Israel of what you would have to call the more sane forces there, centered around former Mossad chief Dagan, moving to stop the drive of Netanyahu on behalf of his British controllers for a strike against Iran. But if you're not closely following the LaRouche PAC website, you're most likely unaware of these developments, much less you would not know what to do to stop the war drive. So given the absolute life and death nature of this crisis, Lyndon LaRouche and the LaRouche PAC team inaugurated a new capability this last week of live streaming on the LPAC website. Joining us today to discuss this development and its strategic importance will be Adam Sturman, who's one of the leading members of the LaRouche PAC website team. Also joining us for the second half of the program will be EIR financial analyst and reporter John Hofel, who will discuss with us the parallel operation to the war drive, which is the financial fraud and manipulation associated with the City of London and its financial operatives such as Ben Bazooka Bernanke, Tiny Tim Geithner, and Mario Draghi of Goldman Sachs and now of the European Central Bank. So let me begin by welcoming Adam Sturman to the program. And Adam, what I'd like you to do is just let us know what changes will people see if they go to the website today.
So we have implemented a new feature on our website from after many weeks of hard work from our crack team of programmers, designers, and video producers. If you go to LaRouchePAC.com right now, there's a banner at the top of the site which announces a feature that we have called LaRouche PAC On Air. And basically what this feature is it is a live playlist. So that means it functions more like television. We supply, if you go to that page and you look in the video player, you will see a button in the upper right-hand corner that says program. And you can actually see the entire program for the day. Right now we have the hours of 8 in the morning till midnight Eastern time is when we have the playlist running, and what it allows us to do, it allows us to display a series of videos that we want you to see, that basically we need you to see, and so it allows us to craft more of an in-depth daily program that really represents the video product that people need to be educated on. So that's our live channel. It runs from 8 in the morning till midnight Eastern time, and it contains both new things that are new. It contains our daily reports that we do twice a day, and it also includes things that we have done from the last weeks, months, and years prior. So it really represents the distillation of our the hard work that we've been putting into our video product over the last several years.
What I thought was most interesting from looking at it this morning is that we obviously are bringing in one of the strong points of our organization historically, which is the historical analysis, archival footage.
Yes.
And a real sense that there's a continuity in history if you think from the proper standpoint.
Also, remember, this LPAC TV operation now has been going it's been going really strong for the last 2 years, but extended, we've done productions all the way back in 2008. So at this, and even some in 2007. So at this point, we have a large library of material that our organization has produced in a video format, and part of this live playlist that it gives us a chance to leverage some of that older material that you may not know is there. It gives us the chance to build, every day we build a playlist that represents that, you know, our editorial team chooses the videos that you need to see.
Adam, one of the things I would say on that I think is important is that on any given day there are developments which have a context where we hope to have new viewers coming on who might not know what Lynn said, for example, in April 2009 when he first identified Obama as Nero. So by giving this access to this, what you'd call a large library, it really should be an organizing feature for regulars to bring new people on and not have them feel lost when they first come to the website.
Yes, that is a very important feature. Yes, that's a very important feature of the playlist, because we are going to be, you know, a person coming to a website is not going to know exactly where to find the video that we produced 3 years ago on the Hamiltonian credit system.
Exactly.
So if it is relevant for today's developments, our editors who helped produce those things several years ago can actually go back, pull that out of the library, put it on the playlist. We can throw in the webcasts in the D.C. area webcasts that Lyndon does. We can pull in questions and answers from that. We are, at this point, we're still expanding our capability to do it, but we're going to be pulling from all of our archival footage is going to end up on the stream. We're going to be, I don't want to give away too much of what we have planned because it'll be a nice surprise when people see it, but we're going to be pulling even on things that are a bit, shall I say, they're older things that were done by presidents, previous presidents. We have some video material from previous presidencies, speeches that have never been really been made public before. We're going to be beginning to make some of this material public on our live stream. So we're going to be pulling in from other resources into this product too.
Now, in terms of the immediate focus, I mean, the obvious point is that this is not a vanity project. This is something that's essential given the nature of the war threat. How are we in a situation where if there are critical developments that emerge during the course of the day, we can move to an immediate report? Is that something that's included with this?
Yes. We try to work on a playlist twice a day. We have kind of like a morning squad and an afternoon squad, and we try to have it planned out as much as possible. But obviously, if something is breaking and we have a really serious breaking report, we have the capability to interrupt to basically, if you're watching a stream and something really serious happens, okay, let's say some terrible military action is taken, and we do a report, we can basically interrupt what you are watching on the stream and basically and push out the latest report. So yes, we have the ability with this capability to push relevant out of, I guess you could say, out of timeline reports into the stream to make sure that you are always up to date with what we're doing. So, yes,
now,
the capability is there.
Let me just ask a question that somebody asked me when I was talking to them about this the other day. we're going to continue posting the while you were sleeping, the end of the day reports, and the basement reports. We're going to continue to be putting those up. At the same time, we'll be doing this LPAC on air, right?
Yes. Let me clarify this relationship.
Yeah.
Our previous presentation on the videos has been what's called video on demand, which means you come to our website, you see a new video, you click on it, and you play it. That's been what people have been used to. Our goal is to begin to move the video on demand more to an archival function. And over a period of time, because it's, you know, we don't have a very large team of programmers, our resources are also low, so you should definitely contribute if you want to see this project move forward. You really have to contribute. But our goal is to make this live channel to be the focal point of our video operations. We want people to come to our website at a certain time, let's say 9 a.m. in the morning, and they know that in the channel is going to be Hector Rivas giving the morning update. We want to be able to standardize our times, and we also want to be able to do live features, which obviously you can't do with video on demand. So if we start moving to more live shows like we did with The Basement two weekends ago, if we begin to do more live productions like that, it's going to be in the channel. So we're moving most of our video operations more towards this live channel-like outlook, but the video on demand will still be there as an archival function. So let's say you miss it, you can go right to our website, you can go to the latest weekly report, and it'll be there when you want it. So yes, even though we are moving towards this channel live streaming concept, we are still going to be presenting the LPAC TV videos on demand as people are used to.
And will there be a capability as we're doing something with this live streaming that will reference perhaps something in the archive that then someone could click and move to the other previous footage? Is that
yes,
possible?
Yes. At this point, our only inability to make these improvements to the channel is really a question of resources. We really lack the required materials and finances to really go, as you said, balls to the wall on this. We still have some roadblocks that are preventing us from doing it. But yes, eventually that is the idea, to bring the channel to be more integrated with the video on demand, to make it easier. Let's say you're watching something on a channel, you want to be able to click on it and go and look at the previous episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So adding functionality like that is something that we're already talking about. It's just going to take time for us to program, to put it through testing, and also to get the required resources that are needed to actually implement it.
Well, let me make a point to our listeners, many of whom complain about the control of the media. They control it. We don't have access to it. Here's where you can do something about it. Contributing the LaRouche Pack will give us the resources we need to make sure that we're not lacking things technically to be able to move to this.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a team of incredibly talented people. We obviously have tons of ideas of what we want to do. It's not like we're lacking on direction of where we want to bring this website. It's really a question of, do we have the funds? Do we have additional funds to bring more manpower here to help us do this? So that's really all it's a question of, is getting the funding, getting the material support that's required to actually increase the functionality of LaRouchePack.com and of our video productions.
And let me also make the point that it is LaRouchePack, so you're going to feature extensively the ongoing breakthroughs associated with Lyndon LaRouche and his immediate collaborators.
Yes, we're going to be there are plans right now to bring in the basement work much to pretty much feature more of what's going on in the scientific research basement team. We're going to be bringing more of this material onto LaRouchePack.com. There are plans for several new videos, can't really talk about them too much because they're still in production, but that's going to make clear to people more and more the scientific concepts that Lyndon talks about so frequently.
And Adam, is there not another webcast coming from the basement in the next couple of weeks?
Actually, I believe there is. Don't quote me on this yet, but I am almost certain that on December 17th, there will be another live basement question and answer session, very much like what happened before. I don't know all the specifics because it's still being hammered out, but I believe a date has been set tentatively for December 17th, and when that has been really solidified, we're going to be obviously advertising that quite heavily on the site.
Good. Now, I know you've got to get back to work, but I still have a few more minutes with you, so
sure.
I'd like to ask you, look, the developments are happening fast and furious. You have the development around the Israeli anti-war forces trying to stop Netanyahu. You have the Russian deployment. With John, we'll be talking about the financial blowout. But we have, in addition to the website is coordinating, in a sense, the national campaign of the LaRouche Slate. So I'd like you to say a little something about that, because, look, we've got a presidential election where the Republican primary is a sideshow. You've got an out-and-out fascist killer in the White House who the Democrats are saying, well, we have to keep him in because he's better than the Republicans. So the only thing out there that's really serious is what we're doing, particularly the LaRouche PAC slate of candidates. So how will that be integrated into the website?
Yeah, first I want to say that I think the Republicans right now are worse than the sideshow. It's actually it's really disgusting. And you think about the fact that we're lurching towards nuclear World War III. You have an economy that is, I don't care what the stock market is doing. Anyone who cares about the stock market is just, they're literally clinically insane. The economy is collapsing. Right? Everyone is losing everything. People's quality of life is just going into the drain, and you have these Republicans that are talking about nothing. I mean, they're not talking about any the issues of national importance whatsoever. So,
I've been saying that the choice on the Republicans is neuter Mitt, and that's probably not a bad idea to neuter Mitt.
Well, yes, neuter Mitt.
How are we going to deal with this?
Okay, the way we're going to deal with it is with our candidates, we are going to run a national campaign. Our idea with our six congressional candidates is that we are going to run as a slate, a national slate. The time has come when we can't solve local issues. There are no local issues. The war threat, the nuclear war threat, engulfs every single nation of the world. The economic collapse engulfs every single nation of the world. So when the local areas start complaining about their budget crises and complaining about their school districts and their fire department shutting down and the local job market is just a joke, the only way that we're actually going to be able to address these issues is with national policy. So, for instance, when we take a project like NWAPA, I don't care if the NWAPA project doesn't touch your county in your particular state. NWAPA is a project of national importance. Every part of the country will be touched by the NWAPA project, even if you don't have a water pump running out your backyard.
Well, Adam, you know, when you were telling me this before the program, I was thinking, if you look at something like NASA, NASA is not an issue for
Exactly.
Houston, Texas, and Cape Kennedy.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. So our candidates are going to run as anti-local candidates. Our candidates are going to go out and go out of their way to push national policies, not trying to get some local funding or to help some local union solve their job crisis. We're not talking about that. We're talking about candidates that are going to put the nation as a totality first. And that's how we're going to address this problem. People are sick of the local politics. All you have to do is look at the crazy redistricting that's going on. Everyone's flipping out about the redistricting. And they should, because all this local all these local political game playing has to come to an end. And the congressmen are federal congressmen. They're part of the federal government. They're not. When you elect a federal congressman, you're electing them to represent the federal government, not some state or local elected official. These are federal congressmen. So when we have our slate of six candidates, they are running on federal national issues, and that's what they're going to represent. So basically, that is our that is in a certain sense our strategy to victory. We're going to have a national slate of candidates. They are not going to run on local issues. They're not going to get in cozy with some local labor unions. They are going to run on national policies that affect the nation as a whole.
And finally, I just think it's worth reemphasizing a point that Lynn made, I believe, in his discussion on Tuesday, that what we're really dealing with here is not really issues as people think of issues, but we're dealing with ideas, we're dealing with principles, and that there's an absolute vacuum outside of what we're doing with the website and our campaigns in this direction. So how do you communicate these principles and ideas? I think that's one of the big challenges that you and your team are taking up.
Yes. The place that you have to start really is by taking some time to really figure out why Lyndon is pushing the scientific basement project, because a lot of people really still don't understand. I guess in closing, I mean, I'll say this. What we need to do right now is we need to begin to look at threats, not war threats, not threats coming from other nations or threats of war coming from the empire. We're talking about galactic threats. We're talking about topics like space weather, which is covered heavily on LaRouchePac.com. We're talking about issues like impact defense systems, which there was a video posted yesterday. It's on the stream. It's also available on demand about the Russian SDE project, which is a project to set up a defense against objects impacting the planet.
Right.
It's in that direction that we have to get people thinking. We have to get people to understand what humanity has as a capability that no other living species has. And it's only when you ask that question to say, what is it that makes mankind special, and approach that from a scientific standpoint, like you do when you begin to think about questions like space weather, or you begin to think about questions like impact defense coming from objects striking the planet. It's only when you begin to think in that scope do you really get an emotional sense of what it means to be a human being, and then you can proceed to figuring out what national policy should and international policy should be. So I think it's when people think about that question that the basement team is taking up on a regular basis and the topics that they take up on a regular basis, it's not until you do that that you'll get a real appreciation for what our political action committee is actually doing.
And then I think also that's the only way you're going to change the country and the world is to engage more people into those kinds of discussions and that kind of thinking.
Yes.
And our website is a crucial aspect of the kind of outreach that has to be done to bring more people to that level of thinking. So, Adam, yes, thank you very much for joining us today. Any final thoughts?
No, I think what I said finally is probably the most important thing. There are still a lot of listeners and a lot of supporters that have either been with us for a while or just are coming on board and figuring out what we do. The most important thing you can do is follow the Basement Project on our website and pay close attention to the scientific topics that we raise. It's not until you understand those topics that we raise that you're not going to understand our political policy until you understand what makes our organization tick, and that's really in the scientific work.
And then make that a topic of discussion in your circle, and
yes,
we'll have the changes we need in the population.
Yep.
That's the only way we're going to win this fight and get Obama out of there. All right, Adam, thanks a lot, and we'll check back in with you probably in a few weeks to see how things are going. And by the way, don't forget, listeners, we need the funds to make this thing function.
Yes, we do.
So LPAC, you can go on site and give money. You can call the people you talk to in our organization. You can go out and raise money, but we need funds.
The legal maximum is $5,000, right, per year?
$5,000 per year, cycle? That's right.
Yes. So do your maximum if you haven't. It would greatly help us improve our ability to move the website forward and also this channel concept that we've now launched in beta.
All right, Adam. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Talk to you later.
Now we'll take up one of the topics that's actually been covered extensively on the website. And we have with us John Hofel, who is a personality on the LPAC website. He's the host of the Weekly Report, which is must-see TV, to use a pretty rotten slogan. But John is also someone who was one of the first people in the country to take what LaRouche was warning about with the deregulation in the late 70s, the changes in banking. John and I worked together in Texas in the mid-80s, where we saw firsthand what was about to be done. And John was then went up to the Washington, D.C. area, where he participated in congressional hearings. There's no one who can speak with more clarity on the issue of the fraud that's been committed. And when I say this, John, I'm not just trying to butter you up, but there are a lot of our listeners out there who toss around terms like banksters and globalists and New World Order as though they actually understand the process. And in fact, this is not just a conspiracy. This is a life and death issue for the planet. So welcome, John Hofel. And John, we saw the stock market go skyrocketing a couple of days ago because once again, the geniuses had figured out what to do with to save the world economy. And why don't you tell us what it was that Bernanke and Mario Draghi and their sidekicks came up with this time?
Well, they issued a strategic press release announcing that they were standing by to provide even further dollar liquidity as necessary to the banking system worldwide. Which is it's not really anything new. I mean, this was treated as some big event, but I think that it just goes to show you that a press release and a few billion dollars into the stock market will do more than just a press release alone.
And you're saying that they didn't solve the problem that's been with us in the last half a decade now.
They've not solved anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the bailout has failed. The euro has failed. The financial system itself has failed. The whole thing is a failure. The financial system died. I mean, you can argue about what you mean by debt, because when you go sailing off the cliff, you're not really dead until you hit the bottom. But we've gone over the cliff, and you can still go to your bank, but that's not long for this world.
Well, John, I think the real obituary for this financial system was Lynn's July 25th, 2007 webcast, where he said there's no way you can solve this crisis with the policies that brought us that created the crisis. Now, that was a pretty simple statement that Lynn made, and yet it's still the case that governments don't seem to have learned that.
Well, they don't want to learn it because the governments are basically working for the empire. And the empire is playing this game of pretending that there's going to be a recovery, pretending that the financial system will come back if we just stick with this bailout. And these bailouts are destroying countries. They're destroying national sovereignty. And what we're seeing under the cover of this so-called bailout and an attempt to save the system is actually the imposition of a global fascist dictatorship, which you can see very clearly right now in Greece, where the prime minister of Greece says, okay, we should put this demand of the bankers up for a referendum. And the next thing you know, he's out, and a guy from Goldman Sachs is the new prime minister.
Right.
You know, that's the way this thing works, that you're taking sovereign governments and destroying them and putting technocrats in place. This is corporatism. And this is what is being done. And you see this in the United States. I mean, you think about the ramifications of the bill that the Senate just passed, declaring the whole planet a battle zone, and therefore, you know, anybody in the world is a legitimate target to be picked up by the U.S. military, and, you know, you have no rights, anything like that. It's not so much that what they've done in the past is where they know this situation is going when they really begin to crack down and impose the austerity, which is, you know, which is coming because the policy is a policy of genocide.
Well, John, I think this is important, the point you just made, that they're making preparations that are not financial in nature, that have to do with austerity, that have to do with war, that have to do with destroying nations and sovereignty. It's clear that while there may be a few so-called technocrats in there who are trying to figure out how to come up with some kind of balance sheet, which they think will show that they can create some modicum of growth in the next 2 years, they're the suckers. They're just put in there to put out the press releases. The actual policy is genocide. It is destruction of nations. Now, I want to pick up on one thing first that I think is very important that we get across, because the president, the narcissistic president, is saying, look, we've solved the U.S. economic crisis. We're now into a recovery. We're bringing down unemployment. We're doing all the right things. But it's the Europeans who are the problem. I'd like you to address this question of the transatlantic system as the imperial system, as opposed to this idea of a U.S. and a European side.
Sure. I mean, the president is simply lying. That this crisis has, from the beginning, been a derivatives crisis. It is the enormous amount of speculation in the over-the-counter, the derivatives markets, which blew up and started seizing up in 2007, and that's why the system ended in 2007, is because this, you began to see this was the beginning of the end for the derivatives markets.
And the derivatives bubble, John, was the product of literally a 35 or 40-year policy of deregulation, of destroying government power over banking.
Yes, the derivatives bubble was a giant trap, primarily for the United States, but for all of the nations of the world, to get, what killed the United States really is the deindustrialization that occurred during this same period, beginning over the last 40 years, the deindustrialization, the shipping jobs overseas and things like that. And in order to mask the destruction of wealth that this deindustrialization created, then they set up the derivatives market, which is a giant game of monopoly. And it's like a giant casino. The whole economy turned into a casino where everybody can bet. And you can place endless amounts of bets on stocks, bonds, anything you want. And this was treated as if it's real. And then when this blew up, the derivatives market, the big banks turn to the government and says, you have to bail us out. You have to bail out our fantasy money, our fictional claims. And the government said, okay, and started to do that.
And John, I want to take up an aspect of this bailout, because I think it's crucial for people to see it, that the idea that was sold by Paulson when he originally brought up this idea of the big bazooka, that is TARP, that we're going to address the toxic asset program, the toxic asset problem, rather, and we're going to do it by somehow reducing the danger of these things on the books. The way it was sold originally was that they're going to write off or write down or somehow stick these derivatives in some time capsule or something. Now, we just had the 10th anniversary, by the way, of the collapse of Enron, which I think is worth noting. Obviously, they didn't do that. They allowed the banks to continue to carry the toxic debt and got money from the governments to back it up.
Yeah, the original plan, like you say, was to buy assets. That was the original purpose, the original intent of the TARP. But the British model was to inject money directly into the banks. Paulson said, no, we're not going to inject money directly into the banks. The British manipulated a stock market collapse that week, and the next thing you know, Paulson is saying, gee, what we're going to do is we're going to put money into the banks. you know, and every time the United States goes against the British policy, you have a stock market panic, and then we slip right into line.
But there never was an effort made to stop the derivative speculation.
No, it's bigger than ever now. The you know, the Bank for International Settlements, which releases numbers every few months, a couple of times a year, they report that the level of over-the-counter derivatives increased about 18% during the first half of this year to an all-time high. And their numbers are low, but the derivatives, what you're seeing is that the bailout itself is being done by the same methods that the derivatives market was created. So you're taking all of this unpayable claims, and you're rolling them all over in derivatives, and you're buying credit default swaps against the collapse of European stocks and bonds, and all of this kind of stuff. And it's just rolling over all of these fictitious claims as if they were real. It's like a gambler going double or nothing. You know, every time he rolls, he loses, and the house just gives him more money to roll again.
And where they're getting the short-term liquidity to pay the few bills that they pay is from the budget cuts, from the looting, from the taxes, from just scraping a little bit of income by slashing budgets. Is that basically right?
Yeah, they're basically throwing people into the wood chipper.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, you look at Greece, where the plans are very clear. They're going to start privatizing the national infrastructure, airports, ports, you know, things like that. The same thing that they're planning to do here, although we're not as far advanced in this, because it has to be sold a little bit more different, more carefully to the American people. But that's what's in the works here. That's what's being planned. That in fact, and all of this stuff is really, in a sense, even the fact that they're pushing all this fascism and trying to set up this global financial dictatorship is in a sense irrelevant, because what's going to happen if they continue to go down this path is that the world is going to collapse into utter chaos, in which nobody can control anything, in which the empire itself loses control.
So, John, in the activity of this last week, I mean, what happened is we've had, since the spring of this year, a series of meetings of the European Union finance ministers, the European Union heads of state. Geithner went over to Poland. Obama brought the European leaders to Washington. And the line coming from Washington is that you've got to have some form of austerity, a unified fiscal policy, and a bailout coming from the Europeans, particularly from the Germans. And since the Germans have resisted this, it looks to me as though what happened in the last week is that Bernanke basically said, all right, then the Fed will go in and be the initiator of the bailout. That's essentially what happened with this most recent move, which included the Bank of Switzerland, Japan, Canada, and the European Central Bank. But how much of does anybody know how much Bernanke is pledging for this?
No, I think he doesn't know either. I think he's writing a blank check. I mean, I think that the policy of having the Fed stand behind the global markets is not new. What you see is more and more evidence of it as the bailout fails to work, but that this has been the policy all along, which is why you saw in the original bailout that so much of the money went to foreign banks.
Right.
Because what you're doing is you're bailing out a system. You're not bailing out individual banks. You're bailing out a system. And the system is international. You bail out this international system. And the Fed is committed to doing that. It has made that clear by what it has done. And frankly, we don't even know everything that it's done. You know, you keep seeing these reports, like the stuff that came out of the Bloomberg Freedom of Information request, where, you know, while everybody was talking about the $750 billion TARP, the Fed was busy passing out $7.8 trillion in loans. And so as we go through this, we learn more and more about what was actually done, you know, back then. And you can bet that what's being done now is far greater than anything they'll admit.
Well, and the other side of the problem is, and this is something we were talking about with Adam earlier, you may have heard our discussion, that outside of what we're covering, the coverage treats these things at face value, that whenever there's a European summit, and Merkozy, the two-headed, three-legged monster, the prime minister of, or the president of France and the chancellor of Germany, they have meetings, they come out looking really nasty, and they say, well, we've solved the problem. And the markets go up, and then a few days later, they come crashing back down again. That, in fact, it looks as though what it's boiling down to is the commitment to a fascist central government in Europe that will override any national parliament on spending and budget and sovereignty questions, combined with an unlimited bailout. Is that your take on it?
Yeah, I think that is exactly what you see, that they're going to milk these countries dry, that the bailout is not really aimed at saving the banks. The bailout is aimed at bleeding the nations dry so that they collapse, and that there are no nations left to resist the empire.
And then at the same time, these nations are being told they have to step up their contribution to destroying governments in the Middle East and Asia.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're bailing out everything the British own, and we're attacking everybody they say to attack. You know, it's kind of stupid.
You're listening to John Hofel from the Executive Intelligence Review and LaRouche PAC. This is the LaRouche Show. We're discussing, in particular, the fraud that was pulled off this week, which is just a continuation of a fraud, to say that the financial crisis was solved by a unified decision for action. Now, John, it was interesting to me. I was still in Europe when this came out, and there were a couple of things which showed the actual nature of the problem behind it. For example, as Cameron, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, the current placeholder for the Queen, was ranting and raving about the need for fiscal governance in Europe, the austerity plan, and so on, the British government announced that their austerity plan is not working. And I don't know whether we covered this very much, but it was prominently featured in the German press, that they don't like the British telling them what to do, even though they end up doing what the British say. But obviously, even in within the land of the empire itself, it's not functioning.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind with the British is that they always are very good at telling everybody else that they should commit suicide, but that the Brits don't follow their own policies. You know, this is for the suckers. You don't see the Bank of England doing all of this quantitative easing in the same way that the Fed does, in the same way that the European Central Bank is supposed to be buying up all the crap, because they're not that stupid.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions here that also came up this week. In particular, we did a report on the role of Goldman Sachs, both in precipitating the crisis and now holding the key seats. I think Papademos of Greece was Goldman Sachs. Mario Monti, the new president of Italy, is Goldman Sachs. Draghi, the chairman of the European Central Bank, was the head of Goldman Sachs Europe. How does Goldman Sachs get away with this, John?
Well, Goldman Sachs is a top-level controller operation for the empire. You know, I think Goldman Sachs, you might call it the one of the unnamed, unlisted members of the Inner Alpha Group. And, you know, they have this policy of bringing people through and training them and then pushing them out into positions of influence. It's a machine for training fascist functionaries. And so that's why you have these people appearing all over the place, because the empire runs them through the fascist training program and then puts them into positions of power to implement this fascist policy.
Now, when you look at the situation then in the United States, I'd like to just take a couple of minutes on this, because the president, of course, is saying the reason we're having problems is that the Republicans aren't cutting enough. There are all sorts of other things of this sort coming out. But this week they pulled a statistical fraud, a typical statistical fraud, by saying that the official unemployment rate had fallen to 8.6%, even as the numbers of unemployed were growing. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I would say, first of all, never believe anything that the Bureau of Labor Statistics produces, because they lie all the time. That the numbers, you know, that if you read the footnotes and you look at their methodology, they may be accurately telling you what they're doing, but the numbers are designed to hide the truth. That you have people who are unemployed who are counted as not looking for a job because they've given up hope.
Well, something like 250,000 were dropped out of the labor market this last month?
Yeah, and you also have all of this holiday seasonal hiring. You know, and that accounts for just about every, that would account for all of the job increases they say they got. So this whole thing is basically a game. You know, we've seen over and over again, well, they'll announce good results. It's better than we thought. And then the next month, they'll say, oh, well, we went back and recalculated, and it turns out last month was actually horrible, but this month is good.
But we're not going to change the percentage.
That's right. So they play these games over and over. The statistics that come out of the federal government, the statistics that come out of the Federal Reserve, these things are all propaganda devices. None of it is real. It's all designed to be used by the media to build this smoke screen about how there is a recovery, about how things are getting better, you know, all of this nonsense, when in fact it's all falling through the floor. If you've got a collapsing economy, and anybody who lives in this economy knows it's collapsing, how do you have these increases in jobs and things like that? It's just nonsense. It doesn't exist. They're lying. They make this stuff up.
Now, on something that gets more toward the real question, which is the complete paralysis or the lack of a real discussion on economics, I was traveling again when this happened, and I may have missed something, but I believe that it was acknowledged this week that the Super Congress failed. And when do these automatic cuts get in? When do those start?
2013. Typical Washington game, you know, you put it off until after the next presidential election. But, you know, the discussion here was over the Super Congress and what a horrible thing it will be if the Super Congress fails, mm-hmm. and how we all have a vested interest in the success of the Super Congress. Which is pure nonsense, because the Super Congress is an unconstitutional fascist operation. That is not our government at work. That is the technocrats. That's the empire at work. And so, you know, this Super Congress should never have been allowed to come into being. It should have been struck down by the courts when it did come into being. And the idea that we have a vested interest in its success is a complete fraud.
Now, this is where you see the convergence of failure across the transatlantic, on both sides of the Atlantic, whether you're looking at Greece, whether you're looking at the so-called U.S. budget debate, you look at the situation in the states, with the state budgets, with local budgets. I mean, John, this is if you really go country by country, and then you look at the crisis in Europe. The Financial Times this week had a headline story, European corporations look for alternative to euro. And the article basically said that they're trying to make plans for what happens when the euro goes. Now, how close, I know Lyndon keeps saying that you can't predict a date, and I'm not looking for a prediction of a date, but we're running out the string. At what point do you think we're going to see another Lehman, something careen out of control, whether it's a hyperinflationary collapse, whether it's a collapse that brings down the banks in a chain reaction? We're getting toward that point, aren't we?
I think we are. The issue facing the Europeans right now on the European Central Bank is, will you allow the European Central Bank to print money like the Fed does, and buy government bonds like the Fed does, and hyperinflate the euro in the same way that the Fed is hyperinflating the dollar? And the Germans have been very strong in saying no. But if you look at what's going on, you know, you have to to keep this game going. That's what you're going to have to do. That won't solve anything. It'll only make it worse. It would be a horrible mistake. But from their standpoint, from the standpoint of these technocrats, that's what they're going to have to do if they want to keep this game going.
Well, and at the same time, Chancellor Merkel came out and said that countries are going to have to give up their sovereignty. We're going to have financial governance, a fiscal union. And interestingly, her partner Sarkozy came out and said, well, we don't want to give up our control over the budget. But in effect, isn't that kind of squawking after the barn door is closed?
Yeah. I mean, this gets back to what I said before, that there is no real attempt to save the financial system. They're using the illusion of bringing the financial system back in order to destroy governments and implement this fascism, the global dictatorship. And this is what you see. You know, nation after nation in Europe throwing in the towel, everybody saying, well, in order to get through this, we have to have some sort of, we have to give up our sovereignty. We have to go to a European-wide structure. And if you do that, you're gone. There are no more nations in Europe. I mean, in a sense, there are no more nations in Europe right now. You still have this fiction that these things are sovereign nations, but they're giving up their sovereignty just as fast as they can.
Well, then, John, you have the obvious point of the relationship between this financial disintegration and the war push from the empire, because the empire's policy, and this is where, look, Lyndon LaRouche has been making this point over and over and over. Don't look for a rational explanation for these kinds of insane policies. That the people who run the empire are insane. The proof for that is they think that it's somehow a good policy to wipe out 6 billion people on the planet. So when you're looking for rationality, that's the wrong place to look. But then what you see is this interconnection of the financial collapse and the war drive. And this is where you get to a point of no return, not just financially, but if you get to a point of no return on the war drive, you're talking about thermonuclear confrontation escalating to a point of being unstoppable.
Well, if you remember, you know, back when the Berlin Wall fell, back when the Soviet Union collapsed and you know, broke up into separate nations, then at that point is when the bankers, the empire, turned the speculation loose. Up until that point, they had to maintain a certain level of physical production in order to be able to protect themselves against the Soviet Union. You know, and then, but once the Soviet Union fell, then what you saw is that the speculators were turned loose on the U.S. economy and on the world economy, and you had then they just started eating up everything like a plague of locusts. And so now we've got to the point where we're no longer able to fight a war. We couldn't fight a war against the Soviet Union except by launching our missiles, going, you know, straight thermonuclear. There can't be a conventional war.
Well, in fact, we're also seeing with the Super Congress, one of the things that they had agreed to was automatic budget cuts of defense. And you're talking about a point at which we're involved in at least two, maybe three or two and a half wars, where we have troops deployed all over the world, where we have a tired army. And at this point, you have the president sending more naval carriers into the Eastern Mediterranean, the Persian Gulf, the Indian Ocean, going to aid to Australia and saber-rattling against the Chinese. I mean, everything, if you step back and look at this, you see the complete proof of what LaRouche is saying, that the existing policymakers are absolutely insane and have to be removed.
Absolutely, and that the push for war is in a perverted way an economic indicator. It shows you the more they push for war, the more it shows they know that we're nearing the end of this game that they've been playing since 2007 when the system blew up. And that when the West collapses, when the transatlantic system collapses, when the Euro collapses, when the United States collapses, that what's going to be left as economies are Russia, China, India. And that those nations then will be in a position to become the dominant powers on Earth. The empire will not allow that.
And that's why they're being targeted.
Yeah, that's why they're being targeted. We have to destroy them. You know, the empires, that's the imperial view. They have to be destroyed because you cannot tolerate a stronger power than you continuing to exist. Now, you know, that's why you see, for example, they have the aircraft carrier George H.W. Bush in the Mediterranean near Syria. Mm-hmm. Now, aside from the fact that you name an aircraft carrier, it's sort of ironic to name an aircraft carrier after one of the biggest wimps ever to hold the presidency. But the good thing about that is that the George H.W. Bush can't launch an attack unless the HMS Margaret Thatcher is in the vicinity.
You got to give it some spine, huh?
That's right. It's the HMS Spine Ship Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the important thing here is then we get to a final point, which is that there are people who say, well, we should take some economic measure, we should bankrupt the banks, we should go with Glass-Steagall, all the things that are important and useful. But you're not going to get there as long as you continue to have the White House held by the man who is provoking this war confrontation and who's not going to allow it to occur. So it's from this standpoint that Lynn is saying the only way to deal with this is to get Obama out. Now, we've seen activity from the Democratic Party with the Pat Cadell, Doug Schoen discussion of getting someone in the primary in New Hampshire against him. But I think that's a useful thing, but it misses the point. Something has to happen very quickly because we're over the edge, and at any point you can have the hyperinflationary explosion, you could have World War III. So, John, just coming back to this whole question, is there, from what you know is going on in the discussions in Washington, are there people putting this together yet? I got a report from some of the youth who were on Capitol Hill this week that said that people had no clue of the immediacy of a possible war with Russia. Are there people who are aware that the financial system is gone, or is this just...
Yes, we have... I mean, we have certain, you know, contacts, especially on the war question. There are a lot of people in the military and military security-related circles
right.
who understand that this can't be allowed to happen and are trying to stop it. On the question of the economy, I think that there are a lot of people who realize that what we have is not sustainable. But I'm not sure they actually understand what real economics is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't really defend yourself on economic grounds if you don't understand economy, which is why Lynn is so crucial in all of this. You know, what's the role of man on Earth? What is mankind? If you don't understand these things, then you can fall into this, well, there are too many people, we have to do this, we have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's my problem with a lot of the people who tend to agree with us in Washington either don't really understand yet what we're talking about, or they haven't yet displayed the guts to come out in front in the open and say it, and that's what has to be done. People have to step across that line. You know, I think about the Alamo. You'll have a line in the sand. You know, you can say whatever you want on the other side of the line. What counts is that you cross that line and take a stand.
And this is where the question of Obama comes up, because this is a president who was put in there to do precisely what he's doing, to stop any potential for change on the economy, and as push comes to shove on the economy, to put the United States into a situation of immediate war, an escalation toward war. So that's why LaRouche has been emphasizing Obama has to go. Now that brings me to the final point I want to bring up, John. You heard the discussion with Adam earlier. I presume that programs such as the Weekly Report will take on an added importance now, given that this is one of the things that will be included in the so-called archival footage of the daily streaming. I assume we're going to continue with the work we're doing with the Weekly Report. Any chance it will become the bi-weekly report?
We haven't had any discussion like that, but, you know, if Lynn has the energy, it would be a good idea. I mean, it is still the the one place during the week where you can go every single week and get the latest in what Lynn is thinking and the latest that's been developed from the basement. So it's the cutting edge of everything that we do. And, you know, so I think the more we could do it, the better, but we don't want to work Lynn to death.
Well, we've got to get more people on the website. Our listeners who are coming up with various suggestions for things we should do, look, we're doing everything we can. Our listeners have to do more. You've got to get more people on the website. You've got to educate your friends. You've got to shake them up. You've got to be out front on this policy of getting Obama out now. And so, John, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. I would like to encourage all our listeners to go to the LaRouchePAC.com website and take a look at the new feature, LaRouche PAC on Air, and then take out your checkbooks, write checks to LaRouche PAC, and join us next week for the LaRouche Show. So, John, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.